because...
Oh!
The audience...
No! I just got an aha moment. I just answered my question. Bopchi, my grandma, has this Pac-Man.
Yeah.
This Pac-Man. And I tried using it once when it used to work, like 2 years ago. And the sound was like, doot, 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 doot. Yes, oh my gosh. It's like that video game sound. Like, whenever I hear video game stuff, I think, like...
That's exactly it. And so people are now making new music with those old sounds because they grew up playing these games and they became so... these sounds became part of their music vocabulary.
This is Songs to Discuss.
With your daughter.
With Willa Krishnaswamy.
And Ravi Krishnaswamy, a dad and daughter team.
Welcome back, listeners.
Welcome back.
Episode 9, almost at season at the end of season 1, episode 10.
So we're going to go to 10 episodes.
Yeah, for each season.
Yep.
We're excited. We're going to take a little bit of a break after season 1 just to let all you guys know, or everybody know, not guys, obviously, that we're going to take like a maybe a two-week break. Is that it?
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
We'll see how it goes, because Daddy's in a PhD program along with this, so.
I'm going to have a lot of reading this
semester.
Lots
to juggle.
Yep.
Yes, we're going to try to keep this episode short, easy to edit, all that jazz.
So what are we talking about today?
We're talking about Therefore I Am by Billie Eilish. Woohoo!
Yeah.
I love this song.
Should we take a brief moment for our sponsors?
Yep.
Okay, first of all, before we break for our other sponsor, we're now sponsored by a new product on the market for pets called Bernie's Bites.
Yes, it's a small business, dog treats.
Started by...
me.
And after we record this, we're going to go out and deliver our first orders.
Yeah, they're homemade, wholesome, dog treats, homemade. Yeah, we've made lots of batches. They're super simple. We don't know who the listeners are, but if there are any listeners in the Spring Glen, Hamden, CT area, like Hamden, CT, Whitneyville, in that realm, check out the Spring Glen page for more info. There's a whole post from you, Dad.
Yeah.
Ravi Krishnaswamy.
We might be able to mail them too. We'll see.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, these are a lot more perishable because dogs are eating them, so dogs don't care if they're, like, 2 weeks old. Right?
Yeah. And they're not made with any... I mean, there's egg in them, but there's no other... There's no, like, butter or cream in them, so...
Yeah, just egg.
Yeah.
Well, now for our real sponsors.
Yep. All right.
All right. Before we get started, should we play an excerpt?
Yeah. Let's listen.
Stop. What the hell are you talking about?
Get my pretty name out of your mouth.
Grooving.
We are not the same with or without. Don't talk about me like how you might know how I feel. Top of the world, but your world isn't real. It wasn't ideal. So go have fun. I really couldn't care less, and you can give him my best, but just know I'm not your friend or anything, damn.
On her stuff.
Yeah. It was produced in her bedroom, I'm pretty sure, with Phineas.
Yep. Her brother.
Her brother, Phineas O'Connell.
Yeah. So I read that this is the first song from a new album that she's not done making yet.
Ah.
But will be coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. No, I don't have any speculations. I'm not a Billie Eilish fan, but
you're doing a podcast on Billie Eilish. I think that makes you a fan.
True. You know, I'm not a super fan, but yes, I am. When it's called When We Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go? That's what it's called, right? Yeah.
Her
first album.
Yeah.
That one was pretty good. Bad Guy in it.
Yeah, Bad Guy.
Let's get into the questions.
Yeah, well, why don't you just talk for a minute about you know, do you like this song?
I like this song. Typically, I don't like vocal fry songs, but this is kind of a different kind of vocal fry. It's a confident...
Wait, stop. What you talking about? Man. Does the audience know about vocal fry? What vocal fry means?
So vocal fry is basically this thing that's very popular right now with young artists and old artists, but I think young artists more.
Singers,
yes. I'm sorry. Artists is a big generalization. So it's basically a thing you do to your voice to make it sound, in my opinion, more whiny. But that's in my opinion, so.
Some would say breathy.
Yeah. What I was saying about.
So can you give us an example of vocal fry?
Yeah.
Like what do you do when you do vocal fry? What does that actually mean?
You kind of like.
You like push it out through your voice, like at the edge of your.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm gonna do an example. So let's say I'm singing like. And I know you love me, but now you don't. Maybe it was like, and I know you. No, that was bad. And I know you love me, but now you don't. That was bad. You do an example. I'm not good at this.
No, that was good. I think that's enough of an example. They don't need to hear me vocal fry. But we've talked a lot about, there's a song that we hear a lot by an artist named Tate McRae. Called You Broke Me First.
That is
so vocal frying. It's like
sizzling.
Yeah. Where'd you get the nerve?
Do you want to play an excerpt for people to hear? Or you know what? You don't have that pulled up. No worries.
Okay.
But it's kind of like if I were to say, like, I'm just going to do another example because my first one was horrible. I'm sorry. If I were like, I know you, like, I know you have a secret. I know you have a secret. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like not pushing out a lot of air.
And I know you have a secret. That was bad. Yeah, I hate when I hear myself do vocal fry because I hate that style of singing, but, you know.
It's all over.
Yeah.
But you're saying you don't usually like vocal fry songs, but you like Billie Eilish.
I like Billie Eilish because her vocal fry is a confident vocal fry. Mm-hmm. See, when I hear a vocal fry, I think whiny. I think, it's like unhappiness.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like you're just... Just conveying emotion in a way that is not very believable because it's so, like, look at me. Very whiny. Very whiny. That's the only word I'm actually going to use that I'm confident in using. Whiny. Because...
See, the funny thing is it's been around for a while.
Yeah.
And I think why you find it annoying is that it's become completely, standardized as the voice you must have to make a certain kind of song on pop radio right now, rather than just a unique and expressive technique that a singer decides to use because they're influenced by certain other singers. It's now like everybody feels like they have to sing that way in order to get on the charts.
It's like if Mariah Carey... saying bad guy. I would not like that because I like Mariah Carey, the Mariah Carey voice I don't like.
Right. So what is it about this song that you like?
It's a confident song, and it's not like if she was whining, like people are talking about me too much, like haters are not being nice to me. And if she was doing that in a whiny way, I would not like this song. But I like this song because it's like a confident... it's also using a philosophy theory, which brings me to my first question that I'll just say right now. So what is the philosophy theory Billie is using in this song? Because I heard about that, and I'm curious about it, and that's kind of also what makes it more like, hey, I have evidence that you're doing this, or I don't know. What is it?
So it goes back to a philosopher... from the 1600s named René Descartes, who wrote in his Discourse on Method, in Latin, he wrote, Cogito. Wait, where is it? I had the. Oh yeah. Actually, the phrase originally appeared in French. Je pense donc je suis, and then it appeared in Latin. Dubito ergo cogito ergo sum. I doubt, therefore I think, therefore I am.
So what is the theory doing, and what is the theory saying? Because I don't speak French.
So what Descartes is saying is that because I'm thinking right now, I exist. So, like, you know how we've talked about seeing the Matrix?
Yeah.
So the Matrix is actually has philosophical undertones in it as a film, because it posits that this is not, like, this world doesn't exist. You're actually in, like, a computer program.
Oh.
But then does that mean that you're a computer program,
or does
too?
That, I hope Earth is an artificial intelligence that, I don't know, some other planet created, because they're high tech and...
It could be, right?
It could be. I mean, in the whole hypothetical or theoretical world, I could be a slug. But I'm in a human form, really. If you think about it, this could be 7 o'clock in the morning. Like,
right.
we invented time and theories and things.
How do you know what's what? How do you know you are actually Willa? How do you know you exist right now?
How do I know I'm not, like, somebody else?
Mm-hmm. Or how do you know you're not just you're not just somebody else's dream of a character?
I've never. Oh my God, you're creeping me out.
So,
like, whenever sometimes I'm, like, lying in my bed and I can't fall asleep, like on weekends when I sleep in, but I don't want to get up, I think, like, oh my gosh, I'm actually seeing a ceiling right now. Is this, like, in my imagination? Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So then how does Billy use this theory?
Okay, so just to back up, philosophy. It's interesting because I have to actually read some philosophy along with my studies, because a lot of theoretical writing on music actually draws from philosophy in certain ways. And philosophy is this weird thing. I don't quite have a full handle on it, but it's essentially this human endeavor of trying to sort of explain existence, explain the universe, explain how things exist, why things exist. It's this thing where most of the philosophy that's been done is embedded in our everyday, and we just assume it and we understand it, but somebody had to actually think that and make that connection and write it down. So Descartes had to actually write down, I think, therefore I am, which means I'm thinking, and that's proof of my existence. And that actually had to be written down in order to then use that idea to prove other ideas later on about thought and about creating knowledge.
Oh.
So it gets really complicated. But
so
I
if I'm not thinking, I'm not alive? No. I'm sorry.
No, you're taking it literally now.
Okay.
Okay, but you want to know how Billie Eilish is using
it. Yeah, because the lyric I'm thinking of is when she's like, the top of the world, but your world isn't real. Mm-hmm. It wasn't an ideal. I should just say the lyrics. I'm not a good vocal fry singer.
So I have three theories.
Okay.
Or three answers to your question. Two answers are my guesses, and one is what she said. So let's start with what she said. She said very little substantively about what the song is about and why it's using that philosophical concept. She's mostly said, I want to kind of hear what other people think of it, and I'm curious, you know. She, like, wants, she's like, I'm putting this out there, and it means whatever it means to you.
Okay.
Which actually also has philosophical underpinnings.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, you know, is the song what she thinks it is, or is it what you think it is?
This is like a Drosty effect of philosophy.
Yeah. Philosophy embedded in philosophy.
Drosty is philosophy, yeah. Though. So
so what she said is, you know, I'm sort of trying to write something interesting and it's open to interpretation. That's what she said.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of glad this song was written because it's actually kind of another alternative on our pop radio that's actually kind of writing about some lyrics that make you ponder. They're like, because pop doesn't normally write about this stuff. The radio doesn't put on this kind of stuff. I mean, obviously, it puts it on this because Billie Eilish is a big artist. She's using the vocal fry technique mostly, and people want to hear her music. But, like, if you listen to all the other songs, they're about love and or breakups or things like that.
Right. No, it's cool. It's always cool when people do something beyond the love or breakup song, which is just like 9 out of 10 songs.
Yeah.
Oh, so okay. So her answer is it's open for interpretation. Tell me what you think. You know. Yeah. Okay. So that's answer number one. Answer number two maps to that. Maps to what she says, which is.
Or is it what do you think?
I think she's doing something in her writing that I would describe, and nobody's. I've never heard this term used, but if I think about the mechanics of songwriting, I would describe this as lyrical sampling. So you know how, like, when you're creating a track, you could sample, like, a trumpet riff from a record, or sample, like, a drum beat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And especially in hip-hop, there's, like, a couple of funk drum beats that have been sampled a million times, and you can almost recognize it.
Like the trap beat.
The trap beat's a little different.
Or...
Yeah. But, like, remember when we broke down the Beyonce
Crazy in Love?
And you know how it was based on that song from the 70s?
Yeah.
By the Chai Lights. So that horn riff was, like, really recognizable from old soul radio.
Yeah.
And it was used, recontextualized. They cut that horn thing out of the song and put it in their song, right?
Yeah.
And recontextualize it. I think Billie Eilish is doing lyrical recontextualization of Rene Descartes, which is basically, if you're of a certain age, you've probably heard that statement at some point. If you've taken, you know, an intro to philosophy course in college, or maybe you learned a little bit about philosophy in high school, you've heard, I think, therefore I am. It's almost like a cliche.
So, like, if you're thinking, I think, therefore I am, basically means I'm thinking, so I'm alive.
Right.
I'm thinking that I'm alive, so I am alive.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, when I say lyrical sampling, I think she's taking a catchy line that people know and just dropping it into her lyrics, like wholesale, like just cutting it out and pasting it. It's like collage, too.
Oh, and it's kind of like what they did in Crazy in Love. Okay, I see what you mean.
So that's kind of what I think process-wise happened. I think she was sitting there writing her lyrics, and that line popped into her head, and it sounded cool. And so that's why she's saying to her audience, well, it's open for interpretation, because maybe she didn't really think it through.
Maybe.
That's my answer number two.
Okay.
Okay. You want my answer number three?
Yes.
Okay. My answer number three is you can analyze this song and listen to its lyrics as a song about being misunderstood. So there's all of the lyrics are about misunderstanding. So she says, I'm not your friend or anything. And then later on, she says, stop, what the hell are you talking about? Get my pretty name out of your mouth. We're not the same with or without. Don't talk about me like how you might know me or how I feel. Top of the world, but your world isn't real. Your world's an ideal, so go have fun. I really couldn't care less. So this is where I get into the psychology of the song, the psychoanalytical approach to the song, is that she's saying to the subject, she's singing to somebody.
Yeah.
And what is she saying?
She's saying you can think what you think, but it's not true about me.
Right. Okay.
So, like, if I thought Ariana Grande was a the singing vocal fry. That's if I thought you were studying, if I thought you were studying in this program just to get a good reputation, or if I thought, mommy, or if I thought mommy, was mad at me, but she wasn't, or if I thought Billie Eilish was singing this song to get, to the top of Billboard Hot 100.
Okay, so these are lots of examples of misunderstanding or just making an assumption about somebody
else,
right?
Yeah, or if I thought this water bottle that I have next to me would not insulate.
Mm-hmm.
That's a weird example, but, I used it.
Yeah, so she's saying, she's singing to, you, the person I'm singing to, you have this idea in your head about me, but it's not correct. So your world's an ideal. Now, an ideal is not something that exists.
It's just something that you think is good.
The concept of an ideal is that
if I were to make cookies and I wanted them to rise, that's my ideal. That's what I want.
Right, but they never rise perfectly.
But cookies never rise perfectly.
It's a theoretical concept. The ideal cookie. It's theoretical. It's not actually what's happening. So she's saying your world's an ideal, okay? And she's talking about this person I'm singing to, you have this world in your head that doesn't actually exist, and you've defined me within this world, and that doesn't exist. And she is refuting that subjectivity of the person she's singing to and the objectification of her. Like, that person is making her into this, reducing her into this object in his ideal world. She's refuting that objectification by saying, no, I think, therefore I am. I am real, and I know what the truth is.
Oh, my gosh. I just had an aha moment.
Dang.
That makes a lot of sense, Dad. Thank you. That cleared up some loose ends.
That is my interpretation. This is a confrontational song, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's not happy with the person she's singing to.
No.
But she's saying, you have objectified me and reduced me into this idea or this thing that doesn't actually exist. I'm over here. I know it's the truth. I think, therefore,
This song is a great alternative to tweeting, hey, stop doing this or something.
Yeah. It's good. All right. So there we go. Three answers.
Yeah. My number two question was actually answered. So my second question was, what kind of vocal technique does she use in this? Because I know it's vocal fry, but since I looked at her vocal fry differently and I felt like this is good kind of vocal fry,
mm-hmm.
I thought maybe it's another technique. But I think it's just the same vocal fry, just sung a little more confidently.
Yeah. I mean, you're getting at her
style.
Her style. But there's a lot of other interesting things going on with the vocal production and performance. I mean, I would argue that part of this song is sort of almost rapped.
Yeah.
It's like singing slash rapping.
I don't know rapping, because rapping's talking really quickly.
Well, wait. Let's listen.
Stop. What the hell are you talking about? Get my pretty name out of your mouth.
That's rapping. It's not a very complicated flow. And then, so the first half, there's no even pitch, and then she gets into pitch.
Yeah. It's kind of like talk singing.
Yeah. Also evident in that clip, when it does go to the pitch, lots of really tightly recorded doubles and harmonies. She's really good at that, singing multiple tracks of the same part, either on a different note or on the same note, keeping the timbre very similar, so you get this just beautiful...
an echo.
Slightly spatialized, stereo-textural version of her voice. There's also, definitely, an octave or two octave below her harmonizer going on throughout the whole song that gives her voice this really sort of dark timbre at the bottom of it. Have you noticed that?
Kinda. Not really, though.
Okay.
I don't know. I just like the song. So my third question, can we move on?
Yeah, sure.
So this is a music video question, which we... sometimes I have music video questions, sometimes I don't. But if you haven't seen the music video for this, just search up Therefore I Am Billie Eilish into YouTube or anything. You can go watch the video. The video is really interesting, isn't it, Dad?
Or it's a lot of fun.
It's very fun, yeah. So my question is, was she legally... Okay, so pause this and go listen to the music video if you can right now, because you'll be like, what are you talking about, Willow, once you hear this question? But if you've seen it, continue listening. And if you can't, I don't know, just... Let me just stop talking. Let me ask my question.
So, all right.
Was she legally allowed to shoot her music video grabbing food and such at the mall, or was she playing it on the edge and stuff? Because she didn't, you know. So she's... I'll just, Dad, let's just explain what the music video is if people haven't seen it and if they can't watch now.
Right. So she's basically walking around a completely empty mall with a camera following her very closely, singing to the camera, but also kind of very playfully, not quite, I mean, there's definitely choreography to it, but the whole thing has a feeling of spontaneity. Like she'll jump over a counter and grab a donut out of the donut shop.
And not pay.
Right, exactly.
Because there's no people there.
There's nobody there. And it's shot in not one continuous shot, but probably only two or three continuous shots, because she does go into the elevator at one point. And then actually, in fact, the whole track pauses and then she gets out of the elevator and it keeps going. But it's almost in just two or three continuous shots. And it's very, it does reinforce the confidence of her delivery and the sort of, I'm not going to play by your rules vibe.
Yeah. Also at the end, it's just so playful. She has like, also just fun to watch. Like she has, pretzels on her. Like pretzels on her arms, dangling, yeah. And donuts and Chipotle and chips and stuff. And but the reason why I'm asking this question is because at the end you hear this disembodied voice saying like, "Hey, get out of here!"
Right.
So obviously she probably would have just like she probably wouldn't have just put all this information out there. But I thought maybe if you had done a little research, you could maybe answer this question.
So. She did release some behind-the-scenes clips on TikTok.
Do you follow her on TikTok?
No, I should. Actually, yeah, I should. Yeah. I better smash that follow button, as they say.
Yeah.
Let's look at one of these behind-the-scenes clips.
Okay.
There's a golf cart.
And failing the shit. Cool nails. Wait, I want to see the golf cart thing again.
So we'll post these clips on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've got a golf cart driving them around. It looks like they're pretty much... allowed to be in there.
Yeah, I was gonna say it looks like that. Yeah, Dad, you should follow her on TikTok.
Yeah. So the other,
I think
get out of here part at the end is staged, but you know.
Yeah, I also think that was like kind of one of the things part of like the philosophy thing, like when people are like, oh, she's like a bad person because bad guy or something. I don't know.
Well, I think.
That was just a theory. I'm sorry. I don't want to get sidetracked.
Yeah. No. I think it does the way that the video is staged does work well with the meaning of the song and the lyrics of the song, because it's kind of like you have this ideal world that maybe the ideal world is this like highly consumerist, you know, space, which is the mall. The mall sort of represents capitalism and consumerism. It's a temple to buying things, and she's just kind of like running around, breaking all the rules, grabbing things. Now the one
thing, and she's not paying.
Right. So the one thing I was gonna say was that before I looked up how they made the video, I figured it had to be staged and not really like they broke into the mall, because if they broke into the mall and nobody was there, including the employees, how would the fresh baked goods end up there? They never have that stuff out in the cases overnight. They put that stuff away.
True.
So that was my clue.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Smart. Okay. So, question number four is, what is the common beat that she uses throughout the song? Like, if you take out her vocals, like, is it like a common beat used in most songs, or?
It's a slow four on the floor disco.
Or is it made like? I'm not your friend or anything.
So it's basically four on the floor, kick drums with hi-hats or something on the offbeats. And
oh, so it's just kick drum.
Kick drum, and like, it's not a full snare. It's like a rim shot. And it sounds like a drum kit that you would use to make like a hip-hop beat or something like that.
What's that thing that's also like, whoop, like, you know, in the beginning it's like, you do the beat and I'll do the other thing. So. Can you play the intro?
Yeah, sure. Let me play the intro. So it's that.
I'm not your friend.
Yeah, for me, whenever I hear that on the radio, that, like, that's the sig, like, that takes off the song. Like, that's like, all right, the song's up. Like.
Yeah.
And what is that?
Do we hear it anywhere else in the song? I don't think we do.
No. I mean, it's very
faint. My best guess is that it's a cuica.
What's that?
Which is this strange percussion instrument from Brazil. Do you want to hear a cuica sample?
Tell me what it is first. Well, I know it's this strange percussion instrument from Brazil.
It's the squeaky thing. I can't even articulate how it works. Hold on a sec.
Okay.
Okay, so.
Yeah, you literally recreated it. So I'm going to do the beat.
Yeah.
I'm not your friend.
So it's like a drum where you change the tension on the head and it makes this squeaky sound. It's from Brazil, and it's used a lot in carnival. So in like big samba drum lines, you hear the.
Oh, yeah.
So this, it's like one random cuica squeak at the beginning.
So cool.
That's Phineas for you.
Yeah. Yeah, so my last question is, in the bridge, what is the synth that goes kind of, can you play it honestly? Because I'm not good at recreating
the bridge?
These things. Yeah, in the bridge, you know the part I'm talking about,
Yeah, let
right?
me play that
So
sample.
What is the synth that?
That part.
Yeah, be quiet. Yeah, that part that's like dun 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, also, correction, listeners, there is a cuica in another part of the song.
Yeah, so if you listen closely, finding the bridge, we realized that the cuica's there the whole time.
Yeah, it's just really hard to hear under Billy's vocals and all the other stuff.
It blends in so well that you don't notice it until you isolate it and then define it, and then all of a sudden you can't not notice it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, the synth part that happens in that bridge...
Mm-hmm.
So my best guess is that is a sound from a sound set or sound card or contact patch or something defined as chiptune. And do you know what chiptune is?
No, but I love talking production because I'm learning all these new things.
Okay, so chiptune is a genre of music that's based on using the very rudimentary sound card sounds that were available in early video games and computer games from like the 1980s. Another name is 8-bit, and they call it 8-bit because...
Oh!
The audio...
No. I just got an aha moment. I just answered my question. Bopchi, my grandma, has this Pac-Man.
Yeah.
This Pac-Man. And I tried using it once when it used to work, like 2 years ago. And the sound was like, doot, 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 doot,
yeah.
doot, doot. Yes, oh my gosh.
So yeah. I have a chiptune
It's like
instrument.
That video game sound. Like, whenever I hear video game stuff, I think, like, you know what I mean, Dad?
That's exactly it. And so people are now making new music with those old sounds because they grew up playing these games and they became so... these sounds became part of their music vocabulary. And so why not make new music with these sounds? Of course, the people who were programming the video games were totally... like the composers who were making music for the actual chips for like the original Super Nintendo or Nintendo system were very frustrated that they had so little to work with in terms of musical sounds. They hated them. They wanted to put big orchestras on these games, and they felt like they were being totally limited by having these very...
But the chiptune is a very iconic sound.
Yeah, now it's become like a nostalgia thing. So this is... I found something that's pretty similar to it. Now that's a clean sound, but I actually...
Yeah, and for people and for listeners, by the way, he has his keyboard right down there, and he was playing it. So
yeah, actually, I'm going to load up the patch I wanted to play originally, which is called Broken SID from a set of sounds called Commodore 64 sounds for Contact, and this one actually has all the digital noise of music that's actually reduced to such a small amount of data in the early digital chips. So it sounds like this.
That's literally the exact, that's literally what Phineas or someone was playing on the piano. Like, Dad, did you get any, like, nostalgia or, like, hey, like,
I thought it was a great example of how Phineas is, you know, sort of creative in his production and the kinds of sounds he's pulling from. And yes, I did get nostalgia. And the thing is that that sound happens in the track, but you don't really get the nostalgia until everything drops out and that's the only thing you hear.
Yeah, because you think of like something moving on the screen.
Right? Yeah, then all of a sudden you're like back in this old video game, which is funny too because malls are kind of out now, but when we were growing up with these video games that had these chips...
Malls were huge.
Malls were huge, and like, she's filming this thing in a mall, which, like, how many people your age have, like, been to a mall more than a couple of times now?
Like, you were like, oh, I'm just gonna go... Hey, Dad, can you drive me to the mall so I can go with my friends? Like, yeah.
I used to...
Well, wait. Was the chiptune in Dungeons & Dragons, a.k.a. my dad's... old favorite video game.
Oh, you mean Ultima 4?
Oh, Ultima 4. Sorry, not Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, Ultima 4 had very basic music and sounds that were in that genre.
You love that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Dungeons & Dragons,
it's Dungeons & Dragons type game, but the one I was obsessed with was Ultima 4.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, when I was only maybe a couple years older than you, I remember getting to the age like 13 or something, or 14, where my parents let me take the Westchester County bus system up to the Westchester County Mall, and I'd go to the mall and go to Sam Goody and buy a cassette.
Was the mall the place you bought your first guitar?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, anyways, that's all my questions. We wanted to keep this episode short.
I'll just point out one other production thing that I pulled up that I liked, which was that Phineas also listens to a lot of, or I think he uses a lot of dubstep type production sounds that have these big growly basses, which are the exact opposite of chiptune. They're like huge sounding. So let me play you one of those sounds.
Was it in this?
Yeah.
Was it in there for him?
So you'll notice at various times a big bass sound that's like this.
Oh, yeah.
Probably down there.
Yeah.
Bam. Just on the, like, bam. Just on the every other, you know, 2, 3, 4. Just on the downbeats.
Yeah, and if people are like, oh my, I can't hear anything, it's probably because of the vocals and everything's layered. And, like, you have to really listen to it on its own to hear it.
Yeah.
But Well, our next episode song will be Save Your Tears by The Weeknd.
Oh, yes. With a creepy video.
Yeah, very creepy. We'll have to talk about that.
And I will have to find the Weeknd stuff is always drawing heavily and directly from 80s music. So we're on a roll here.
Yeah, especially with synths.
Yeah.
So have a nice weekend, day, whatever. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.